First case on calendar is 98-366, Barry McNamara et al. v. City of Richmond. Mr. Edwards.
I thought you admitted there was no negligence.
No, I did not understand. If you look in the transcript of the hearing with the judge, that was quite clear with what I said there, that we weren't going to bring in anyone who said that they could do it more efficiently, but that we felt that under Section 858 in the Klein v. American Aggregate case, and it was codified in 15.117, that all we had to do was prove unreasonable harm under the criteria there, and that is in essence negligence.
Well, I thought your cause of action really was based on the unreasonable harm you allege you suffered as a result of the pumping of the groundwater.
And that is negligence because...
How does that equate to negligence if they...
Because there is a duty under Klein in Section 858 to avoid unreasonable harm, causing unreasonable harm by the withdrawal of groundwater. That's what the court adopts in Klein.
Okay, but that's not a negligence action. That may be an intentional tort.
No, it's not an intentional tort, Your Honor, because under the criteria listed in 850A, you go through there and do a balancing test to determine whether their conduct was reasonable or unreasonable. That's what the criteria set forth in 850A and codified by the legislature at 15.117. Make that determination.
But does unreasonable conduct equate to negligence?
I believe so, yeah.
How?
That's what the restatement of law says. The restatement of law says it is the conduct by which one person would avoid causing another unreasonable harm under Section 282 of the restatement of tort.
The reason I press you on it is because I'll find here where I thought, even in your brief, you said we're not claiming negligence, so...
That was me. That was absolutely...
Anyway, I'll find it someplace. And if that's the case, I mean, let's assume just for purposes of argument that's the case, then sovereign immunity would never be impacted here, would it?
Well...
For instance, let's remove, for purposes of argument, sovereign immunity from this political subdivision altogether. Say it isn't the law. So we put this political subdivision on equal footing with any one of us. For you to have a cause of action against them directly, mustn't there be negligence?
Yes.
Okay? Because that's how we get to a tort, isn't it?
Yes.
A duty owed, a duty breached, negligence. Okay. So you have to show some negligence.
Yes.
With or without sovereign immunity.
Exactly.
So that if, in fact, there's no negligence for purposes of argument, sovereign immunity in this case makes no difference, does it?
That's true. However, this court has already decided that if I sued anyone other than if he took sovereign immunity out, I would state a claim under Klein v. American Act. I've already done it all over the state in cases that have been appealed to this court. Against private individuals under the case law of Klein v. American Act, we've gotten jury instructions on it. So there is a cause of action under Klein v. American Act if you take away the sovereign immunity issue. That's important. So there is a claim out there, and it does sound to me. Maybe not to typical negligence, but that, I think, because the concept is still new under a lot of law.
So the other suits that you filed and the jury instructions and the jury verdicts that I think you said you've gotten are all against other than a political subdivision.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct.
Your concept of negligence here, I take it, is if Rittman drills a well and they do it pursuant to the best technology available and it affects someone else, someone downstream or someone away from the aquifer, in a negative way, decreases their ability to draw good water from wells from which they have been drawing water, that's the kind of negligence you're talking about.
If that well causes them unreasonable harm after you balance the criteria set forth in 850A and 1521.17, if you go through this list of 9 criteria and the trier of fact determines that what this person suffered was unreasonable harm or harm unreasonably caused, then yes, that's the concept that they were talking about, Your Honor. But I don't think just because Griffin drilled a well and my client went dry, that's enough. No, I don't believe that's enough. I think they have to go through all the criteria and do a balancing test to establish the unreasonability of the conduct.
And does that unreasonability, I don't know if this is considered similar to a standard of care in the negligence, a typical negligence case, but do you say courts should look at it from the standpoint of unreasonable? You used both. Unreasonable use by the, in this case, the well, the Whitman well, or and should that standard be different because it is the city drawing that water?
No.
Or is it from the standpoint of the surrounding property owners and only and any unreasonable taking as opposed to unreasonable taking from them, even if it's the city?
I don't believe it's a different standard because of the city. It's the other part of the question. The criteria listed in 850A, which is classified as under Ohio law, it is 9 factors, and it's the purpose of the use, the suitability of the water.
But obviously, a city's purpose, we don't usually think of it. So an adjoining landowner is using for individual purposes, but a city's use, how are we to apply those factors?
A city's use is a business. That's what the comments 858 said. They are to receive no preference over individual homeowners. And in fact, Ohio right now, the Public Utilities Commission regulates about 27 to 30 private water companies. So the city of Richmond is in a business. Proprietary function, this is a business for Richmond. It is no different than any private water company around the state of Ohio. And in fact, if you grant them immunity, they now have a leg up over private water companies. Because private water companies, if they did my fight, we wouldn't be here. There'd be no governmental immunity. And therefore, Richmond is in fact enjoying a benefit over private water companies engaged in the same conduct.
Just pressure for one more minute, if I might. Page 13 of the brief of the appellee, they say, despite plaintiff's acknowledgement in their complaint and plaintiff's counsel's acknowledgement on the record in the trial court that the cause of action is not based upon negligence, the appellants now argue so-and-so. They say, plaintiff's acknowledgement in their complaint and plaintiff's counsel's acknowledgement on the record in the trial court. Are they just not telling us the truth?
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's serious, isn't it?
Yes, it is. If the court looks at my reply brief, I cite in the court portions of the transcript. And in fact, in my reply brief, I attach the whole transcript to that. And what I say in there is, I say, look, Your Honor, we're not going to bring in someone who says they could have operated the well field more efficiently. We're not going to bring that person in. What we are saying is that there is negligence, and it's a violation of the duty of causing them unreasonable harm under the circumstances. So I made the same argument to the trial court that I'm making here today. I haven't wavered in that argument at all. And I'm telling the court right now, we're not going to bring in a water expert who's going to say, they could have saved 100,000 gallons by doing this. They could have saved 20,000 gallons by doing this. We're not going to bring that person in. And I don't think Klein requires it. And our Section 858 requires us to say that they could have got the water out more efficiently. There, that is one factor in Section 850A. It is the practicality of avoiding the harm by adjusting the use for methods. So how efficiently they get it out is taken into consideration under Section 850A in determining whether there is unreasonability. So that's not completely left out of the mix, but it is only one factor of the 9 that is taken into account in determining the unreasonability of the conduct.
they mean when they say you acknowledge in their complaint it's not based on negligence?
I don't know. My complaint speaks for itself. What I said was it's causing the pumping of the groundwater has caused the plaintiff unreasonable harm in the lowering of the groundwater.
I really think what they're doing is they're making more of your statement. That this is not a negligence case that you are making of it, and probably than the trial court made. I think that's the issue. You stated your proposition of negligence to me finally very clearly. It's different than what we think of traditional negligence, but it's just that if you dig a well, somebody digs a well and it damages somebody downstream, that's quote negligence.
Yes.
That's your regardless of how they do it.
Right.
They could have done it better, could have done it cleaner, could have used different equipment, could have saved a little more water. Doesn't matter. If I'm damaged, I'm downstream, and you've taken some water from me, and I no longer have same quality water, that's negligence in your concept of what you're doing.
If after you go through all the nine factors, if the determination is made of unreasonability, then yes, that is correct. And how efficiently they did is one of those nine factors that is not the sole determining factor.
Now, how does discretionary versus non-discretionary conduct by the public entity here?
Well, Your Honor, the conduct that's involved here is taking groundwater. The Court of Appeals focused on five other facts. They focused on the location,
the conduct is the providing of water to its citizens. It depends on where you start. If you say it's the taking of water, that probably leads you pretty clearly to this not being a discretionary, high-level discretion. However, if you start with a city making choices about how to provide water to its citizens, now you're talking a little differently, aren't you?
Well, yes. If you follow a chain of decisions all the way down, they have decided to enter the water providing business. Yes. They've decided that instead of contracting out, they're going to do it themselves. They've decided that instead of building a reservoir, they're going to have wells. They've decided where to put the wells. So you have a series of decisions they have made, and the question is, where does discretionary stop, and it becomes merely the implementation of the policy in the first place? I think the policy is clearly, well, we're going to provide water to our citizens. We're going to do it ourselves. We're going to do it through a well field. After that, I think it's pretty much the implementation of the policy and not really policy for discretionary decisions.
So you say then once all that discretionary, the real planning kinds of things are finished, that then they had a duty to pump reasonably. Only reasonable amounts, is that it?
Yeah, well, they could pump however much they need. Yeah. I will say also, they could have pumped groundwater to the well field and not caused, and we not been here today. It's only when they went beyond the amount of water that then started causing my clients unreasonable harm.
Well,
came
but it wouldn't have been sufficient to meet the needs of the citizens.
That is the problem. Yes, that's correct.
Isn't that discretionary? They decide, our water quality is bad. We've got to find another well, another aquifer, and we decide we're going to take 1,000 gallons per second, way off, 1,000, whatever it is, to satisfy the demands of our city. Isn't that all discretionary?
No, I believe the decision maybe to enter into the water providing business may be discretionary, but the decision to just take the water out of the ground, that's what we're talking about here, taking that portion of the water out of the ground that caused the unreasonable harm. They could have taken some out without causing unreasonable harm. As Chief Justice indicates, that wouldn't have been enough. But the fact that they needed more than what the ground could provide doesn't make it a discretionary decision on their part. There's no discretion. They needed it to help. There's no planning or high-level policy making in taking water out of the ground. It's being taken out of the ground. For a water-producing plant, I can't imagine a less discretionary job than getting the water out of the ground.
Well, if they had decided that we need X amount of water per minute for our citizens, and we cannot get that amount from this aquifer without causing some harm to your clients, for example, And so we're gonna go out of the water business. We're gonna contract out to a private company. Would that all be a discretionary decision? Or?
Well, yeah, I think the decision to go from doing it ourselves to contracting out, that decision is clearly discretionary. But the determination that we need so much water out of the ground and whether this aquifer is provided or not, that's not discretionary. I mean, that's a simple mathematical calculation. And there's no discretion involved in that. It's not weighing alternatives to get the water out of the ground. Once you make the policy decision, we're going to put the well field in, we're going to put it here, there is no discretion in taking that water out of the ground.
Your claim isn't that they negligently implemented the taking of the water from the ground. It really is part and parcel of the same decision. I think that's what the Chief Justice is trying to say.
I agree, but this court has held in Anderson and Garland and a couple of other cases that are escaping right now that once you set the policy, the implementation of that policy is not protected. It isn't nearly
from negligent implementation. Isn't that right, Counselor?
No. Well, the negligent conduct and we're alleged.
Yes.
And what I'm saying is, this is merely the implementation of policy. They've decided to put a well field here. Anything below that is merely the implementation of that decision. And this was negligent in their conduct once they had made that policy decision. And they're simply, my time is expired. I would appreciate any 30 seconds to rebuttal.
You have 30 seconds. Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Mr. Baker, thank you.
Without sovereign immunity, would you concede that maybe you have some liability?
On the facts, no.
That's really the issue, isn't it?
Right. I understand what you're saying. No. Because on the facts in this case, if you just look facts specific to this case, what the city of Richmond did when it was implementing or trying to determine whether to undertake this project, it had studies done, the ODNR was involved, the OEPA was involved back in the 70s. Extensive studies were done of this aquifer, of its quantity, of its quality, of the ability to supply Richmond, and also of the projected drawdown that Richmond's usage would make over the years of this aquifer, how much it would lower the water table. We are well within the projections that were made back in the 70s. Richmond's withdrawal of water from this aquifer does not exceed what the ODNR and the OEPA projected and approved back in the 70s.
So it would be your position that if you were found not to have sovereign immunity for these acts, you still are not going to be found to be liable?
Yes. If the court found that the restatement and the standards in 1521 apply, under these facts, that's true. And that would be true in virtually every case where we have a political subdivision doing what Richmond did. And as the court knows, many of our cities in Ohio get their water out of the township. This is a major problem, and this is a major concern among the cities and municipalities. They can't get water for their citizens within their corporate limits. Unless they're sitting on top of a major aquifer, and many of them are, Cincinnati, Barberton, some of these others can't get this water in another county. Can't get this water for something wrong and pipes it back up. So they all go through the same process, though. There's an extensive process with the EPA, with ODNR, engineering studies, facility studies, determine whether an aquifer is sufficient, things of that nature. There's already in place a very heavy regulatory scheme by statute that regulates these things. And therefore, if it was a balancing test of reasonableness, I think they'd win in every case.
You offered these plaintiffs the right to tap in, did you not?
Yes.
At the same relative cost as you would be letting anybody else tap into it?
The mechanics of it, in terms of getting down to what it would cost, who would pay for what, it never got to that stage because the concept of making it available was rejected. It became a...
But wasn't it rejected because of the secondary fact it's going to be so costly to them? You were not going to pay for their tap-in fees, etc.? Yes. Wasn't that discussed?
All of the things discussed, yes. Ultimately, though, there were never any decisions made, there were never any specific risk proposals. Basically, what the city of Richmond was going to do was to run a line up the street of Sterling, a water line up, and then permit anybody that wanted to tap in.
But many of the people were so far away that it would be so costly for them to try to tap in.
Most of them weren't. It wouldn't have been any more costly than the re-drilling of the old outdated wells that couldn't draw water more than 28 feet anyway. Again, on the facts, many of these wells were old and used piston pumps, lift pumps.
What does that have to do with that? I saw that in the facts.
It goes to the issue of reasonableness, if that's an issue.
So that is balancing.
That's an issue, right. Right.
But we're not here on that. This case went out on sovereign immunity, right?
Well, yes and no. We're here on sovereign immunity, I believe. We're also here on the statute of limitations issue.
But the court never got to the balance of the
test. Correct.
So all of that is...
And it's our position.
Right.
It's our position that the balancing test and the decline do not apply to a political subdivision in its acquisition of water and conservation of water.
That's
our position in 2744, right? The sovereign immunity statute.
So this whole business about the quality of their wells, whether they had good water, hard water, or shallow wells, the whole pump, really doesn't have anything to do with anything.
No, other than applying to justice, it's this question about the reasonableness of the balancing test. How would we feel if we didn't have sovereign immunity?
Okay, that's not why we're here.
That's right.
And am I correct or incorrect? You went into a lively discussion of ODNR and their evaluation of the aquifer and the effect on the aquifer. That doesn't mean if you go through all these tests that you have immunity from liability.
It would go to the reasonableness.
That gets to the balancing test again.
Well, first of all, I think we go to the discretion and the judgment, the high level of discretion and judgment that's exercised after extensive study tests, approvals by various regulatory agencies, and things like that, as opposed to just a whim or a decision by a city council without any adequate effect.
So you studied the alternatives and you decided rather than we're going to go with what?
The ODNR recommended this as the best available source of good water for the inhabitants of Richmond. In the study that we've done.
But let me ask you about the community question of what's the difference. If Richmond, there's a big move toward privatization. If Richmond today decided, we put this in and now, we think the Ohio Water Company or the American Water Company or whatever the private company is can do a more efficient job of running our system, filling the customers. So we're going to turn it over to them. Community still apply?
It would be a different situation. I believe that under the scenario that you get positive, I believe the PUCO and its regulatory scheme would apply to that private water company. The statute that controls that accepts out the definition of a public utility, a municipal water company. We come under a lot of other different statutes, including the sovereign immunity. So do I answer your question?
Would you agree that prior to the statute going back, prior to, I think, governmental function kind of distinguishing that, provision of water was proprietary function of the old law.
Yeah, I mean, still, I think under the Urbana, the old Urbana case, this of course, the provision of water is a proprietary function. For which the political subdivision would be responsible if, first of all, if it was negligent. But then, even if it was negligent, if it was discretionary, it would be an exception. This is a difficult case from the standpoint of the facts because we have so many different issues in here. And I recommend what you're asking in terms of trying to limit it. Why are we here?
Thank you.
Not your decision. I thought they were saying that the negligence here is the fact that Rittman has dug a well and taken water from us. We no longer had the water we had when we from our wells, and that doesn't matter what kind of equipment you used and the quality of your drilling and so forth, but we're harmed because you made a decision to take our water. It's a little different.
And working back, you caused harm, therefore you must have been negligent, as opposed to saying you had a duty, breached the duty, approximately caused the damages to the
complainant. Is that more of a strict liability type of argument?
It's very similar. Well, your argument is that you would be liable under any circumstances if they proved that they were harmed.
They don't say you did it negligently, finally, they don't say you.
Because
their water went down, and that caused the problem, so you must be liable.
Yes,
that's,
and we believe
it takes
more than that under the statute. Is the trial court or the court of appeals? What I just gave you. The trial court found, because of the statement, and I know the court doesn't believe it, misinterpreting, I quoted the state's counsel that they were not claiming negligence in this case on the record, but the trial court found that if there was no negligence, there would be no liability for that disclosure. So the Court of Appeals then went to the next level and used the discretionary argument, assuming even if there was negligence, that this involved a high degree of decision making discretion. Therefore,
you have put the subject in
the case. Thank you. Both. You have a chance to give us your strongest argument on assuming the discretionary distinction here is important. Where does it end? Where does the discretionary conduct of the city end in the implementation of that decision-making begin?
Well, if you look at the cases that have been cited in the brief, where we can say clearly a decision of an employee to put the subdivision turn left in the face of an oncoming car is not a discretionary decision, it's negligence.
Sure, it flows from him deciding to drive, according to your brief.
Sorry?
Sure, it flows from him deciding to drive. Turning left flows from his deciding to drive, a discretionary act. Therefore, everything is discretionary.
Okay, so if you look at what the acts are that are alleged to have been for which we're responsible, which are turning on the pump, I guess, that's what we're down to. The city does regulate its usage of water and its withdrawal of water. Its withdrawal of water has been consistent through the years with the projections and approvals of the ODNR and the OEPA. So it does involve determination of how much water to pump, more than just flipping a switch. And in this case, it's not about the city negligently flipping a switch and letting the water run away into the stream or something like that. There is discretion.
Well, I think there are three
well fields, and they alternate well fields. So the discretion involved is when the switch went off, put another one on, and things of that nature. For example, the city does provide emergency water to these fighting bombs that are really subservient. We put a water pipe right there in town that they use, their fire department. That was a decision that was okay.
Mr. Edwards, I think if I characterize his position correctly, as I understand, he believes that the decision to take water, to select an aquifer, where to find the aquifer, which one to use, and so forth, is discretionary. But that once the well is drilled, there's no more discretion. Once once the water begins to flow out of the aquifer, that's really what is at stake here. Is that the issue?
We believe it's contrary, Your Honor. This is not. You can't just say this is an implementation of a decision. Therefore, the implementation is a non-discretionary act. The actual day-to-day operation of a water works facility like this involves day-to-day discretion and decision making of the highest level. This isn't just a simple thing we made. We determined we're going to put a street light up down in the corner, and that's protected. And then later, when it doesn't work properly, it's not protected. This is totally different from that.
I guess your argument would be that if in the drilling of the well, someone was injured due to the negligence of an employee in the city, that would sort of be the reliability there as far as the city.
The actual drilling?
Yeah.
The council, you read my time, but I don't know. I want to come back to what trial court ultimately decided. I'm looking at a judgment entry of 8-30 that says the receipt is. The judgment on the statute of limitations was granted during August June 14th. Motion for summary judgment on governmental immunity was denied, and then it goes on to say he's reconsidering that, and the order's motion is well taken, should be granted to reconsider. Britain is immune from liability for the claim set forth in the complaint. Judgment is granted in favor of the defendant.
He based that on the his perception that there was no claim of negligence.
No, he said that it's granted for the reason that the city of Whitman is immune from liability for the claim set forth. That sure sounds like he's basing that on judgment of immunity as well.
By saying that there was no negligence in the operation of proprietary function, therefore the implicit subdivision became immune. Under 2744. The Court of Appeal then went to that next level and said they're immune also because of the discretionary the nature of the decision to do what they did. So they covered it both ways. The only thing she didn't do at the trial level and the Court of Appeal level was apply the clear language in 2744 of a 2-year statute of limitations for property damage against a political subdivision. This is the first case in Ohio where before this court, where involving water rights, things of this nature, where the sovereign immunity statute has been pled and used. So that's why we're
here. Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Mr. Edwards, start with 30 seconds.
Just briefly, in my appendix at 814, I set forth exactly that we are arguing negligence and of duty, breach of duty, and to address Justice Stratton's question, no, we are not saying that because they pump water, there's a liability. What we're saying is once you go through the factors of 858, there's a duty and a breach of the duty. So it's not strict liability. It is a balancing test when you're trying to determine unreasonability of conduct. The issue of who bears the cost, this issue of them offering to run water to Lundgren. It was never developed in the trial court. It was never developed in the Court of Appeal. I suspect that when he just said, wait a minute, you didn't offer these people water, all of a sudden now it's an issue. There is nothing in the record that says that they offered to run my clients and provide them water. They left my clients high and dry. If this is discretionary, in the case of Hill versus the city of Urbana, why wasn't that employee's decision to throw that switch discretionary? The employee could have easily not thrown the switch, would have not sent the water through, and needed that person to get down in the ditch. That was clearly discretionary. That employee could have thrown the switch or not thrown the switch. So, I mean, if everything in life has discretion, and it's only that discretion involving those high policy and judgmental decisions that this court has indicated that deserve the protection of the immunity.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.